Gang, are you looking for better sleep and relaxation or relief from pain or anxiety without feeling totally drugged? Well, let me tell you about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. True Hemp Science promises premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products in the Austin area and beyond. They offer a complete line of full-spectrum CBD products, including oils, tinctures, skincare lotions, sports rubs, gummies, and chocolates. Gang, I've been using their products for a while now, and they've lowered my anxiety and given me incredibly restful sleep. How Did I Get Here has teamed up with True Hemp Science to bring you a very special offer that benefits all of us. Spend $100 or more at True Hemp Science, and they will include either the number 81 distillate, which is great for nighttime, or the number 23 distillate, which is great for daytime, with your order. And that is a $25 value. Just go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. That's truehempscience.com/HDIGH. And balance your body and mind with True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. Let's get down. Hey gang, it's Johnny. I just want to take a second to talk to you guys about engagement. Right now, you're listening to the show, and I'm not sure exactly what platform you're listening to it on. But whatever platform you're listening to it on, you can subscribe to it and get an alert every time a new show drops, usually every Tuesday and every Friday. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Whatever platform you're listening on, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, any platform, you can subscribe to it. And if you can leave a comment, leave a star, share it on your social media if it's something that you like, please do that. We encourage you to do that. And also, as far as social media goes, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I am at Johnny Gowdy on Instagram and Twitter. Give us a follow. Also, you can like our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Please do. Anyway, all I want to say is, you like a show, share it, use the hashtag How Did I Get Here Pod. We'll give you a shout out. Thank you so much for listening to the show and engage.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Hey, the vault.
Johnny, I'm your host, and welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where we reach back into our vault of a zillion episodes, pull one out just in case you missed it, just in case you want to hear it again, shine it up, and re-release it for you. Today, we're going back to episode 1086 that was released on August 20th, 2021, with James J.Y. Young, founding member of legendary rock band Styx. Yeah, baby, that's right, Styx. They were on the show. They had just released their album, Crash of the Crown, and they were heading out on tour. That's what was going on. Listen, man, this was a weird one, because I had gotten an email from the publicist for Styx, like back in May or April, that said, hey, Styx is going on tour. If you want to interview somebody in Styx, let me know. And so I was like, hey, I'd like to interview James J.Y. Young or Tommy Shaw. And she was like, well, that's going to be a tough one. I'll get back to you. So flash forward, I never heard back from her. Flash forward to August, like beginning of August, I tested positive for COVID in the morning. And then later that afternoon, I get an email that says, hey, Johnny, sorry for the short notice, but JY is available tomorrow. Like, so here I am suffering from COVID, but I know you can't say like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do this right now. So I ended up doing this phone conversation with James J.Y. Young from Styx while I had COVID. So that was a weird part of the conversation. One sad thing is, we did this back in 2021. We had a conversation. We were talking about what he does when he's not on the road. And most of the time he was taking care of his wife, who was very ill. And sadly, in 2022, she passed away. So, you know, God bless James J.Y. Young and the dedication he had to his wife. And just, you know, there's a lot of love there. And you know, I don't know. I feel for the guy. I hope he's doing okay. I know Styx is going back out on the road this year, 2023, and doing some giant tour again. So get out there to styxworld.com. Find out when they're coming to a town near you. And enjoy my conversation with this legendary rock star, James J.Y. Young, founding member of legendary American rock band Styx. Let's get down.
How did I get here? From the vault.
Styx. Okay, so my experience with Styx goes like this. I probably heard Lady on the radio, right? Probably. I don't know. I'm sure I did. But then Come Sail Away came out when I was like 8 or 9 or something. That song exploded my head, bro. Like that, like when that was my jam. I got the record, The Grand Illusion. Got into James J.Y. Young's song, Miss America, at that age. Like that was my other favorite song on the record, which is really cool. Anyway, I talked to him about that too, because I also believe after listening to that song as an adult and kind of like going through the Styx catalog in preparation for this, maybe it was the COVID and hallucinations, but when you listen to Miss America, it sounds like the prototype of an Iron Maiden song, really. Like the riff and everything, if you sped it up and stuff, it just kind of has that feeling. Anyway, so I got into Styx, and then they were a band that one of my favorite bands at the time. And I really connected with James J.Y. Young, because at that point, like, you didn't have MTV yet or anything like that. You could only see these people like in magazines and their band photos and stuff. And James always was kind of like making a face. He had this sort of like, he looked taller than everyone. He kind of seemed like he was the guy, you know, and kind of became him and Tommy were always my favorite guys. I love Tommy Shaw too. Tommy Shaw's amazing. My favorite Styx song in the world is Too Much Time on My Hands. I love that song. Anyway, so that's my experience with Styx is that. And then when I got in junior high, I became friends with this guy who doesn't even know that I did this podcast until I send it to him when it comes out. My friend Craig, and he had been living in Chicago, and Styx is from Chicago, and he was very into Styx, Paradise Theater album had come out, and we used to jam that. And I know that Craig Schilling, one of his favorite bands was Styx when we were growing up, and I know he still loves them so much. Anyway, so I'm excited for him to hear this. Craig, this is for you, baby. Anyway, so then Mr. Roboto came out and Don't Let It End. And while I liked Mr. Roboto, I remember, because I was like in eighth grade when it came out, I liked it. Then Don't Let It End came out, and it kind of, that one, you know, it kind of lost me. It was a little like soft rock for me at the time. I was in eighth grade, for crying out loud. Come on. Anyway, so you know the story of Styx. You know that Dennis DeYoung hasn't been in the band in over 20 years, but this guy Lawrence Gowan has come in, and he's really fantastic. There's a guy I think that lives here. That's their drummer, Todd Zuckerman. Fantastic drummer, amazing drummer. I think he just won like Drummer of the Year, like Prog Drummer of the Year. This Crash of the Crown record came out in June, and it was produced by Will Ivankovich. Who is now in the band too. And this record is fucking great. It's probably their most prog record too that I've ever heard. And JY and I talk about that too. Anyway. How exciting that I got to talk to James J.Y. Young. Imagine, those of you who are my age that grew up with Styx, imagine your phone rings and the thing that comes up is James Young. Like that's the name comes up on your phone. And you're like, oh God, he's calling me. You answer the phone and he's like, Johnny G. It's great. It's great. James J.Y. Young. I love talking to him. I love Styx. Find them at styxworld.com. Check out this record, Crash of the Crown. They're actually also on tour. They will be in Austin on Saturday, October 23rd at the Nutty Brown Amphitheater. It's a little bit outside of Austin, but that's a great place to see a show. Safe, outside. And Sunday, October 24th, they'll be at Floor's Country Store out there outside of San Antonio. They're playing some cool places, Ben. I love Nutty Brown Amphitheater. Anyway, I'm not going to keep you from this conversation any longer. Once again, it was a setup thing, and these things are like 30 minutes, they're set. It's not just me and him grooving out. You know, we're doing an actual interview, and it only lasts, 30 minutes. So that's kind of sad about it. I wish he would have come to my house and we would have hung out, but it was very cool having him call me on the phone. It was very exciting. This is all very exciting for me. I got to be honest with you. Styx fans, thank you for listening. I hope I hope that it's a conversation you can get into. So, without further ado, let's talk to founding member of Styx, James J.Y. Young. Let's get down.
Yeah.
Johnny. Hello.
Johnny G.
Yeah, hi, James. How you doing?
James Y here. I'm good. Just did 30 minutes with another person, and now I'm going to talk to you.
Great. How is the tour going so far?
I would say, considering everything that's going on in the world with the viral infections and this and that and the other thing, it's going pretty darn well.
Yeah, I got to see some footage from some shows from a few days ago. I guess that's the blessing and the curse of nowadays, isn't it? Whatever you do,
there's a video camera wherever you go.
Yeah, and you have
somebody's got it in their wallet or their purse.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Dude, let me ask you this, because I'm a musician as well, and I've been playing since I was 14 in the early 80s. And by the way, you've been a huge inspiration for me, and I'm a huge fan of yours. Not just the
appreciate
band, but
that.
Of yours personally. I think you've always been like one of the coolest dudes in rock.
Well, I heavily influenced by Jimi Hendrix, who I saw play 5 times. And I saw The Who play, I don't know if you've ever seen this Monterey Pop.
Yeah.
Festival where they smash all their gear and stuff.
Yeah.
And I saw them 2 weeks later when I was 17 years old come to Chicago for the first time. And Townsend, he had a real hard time breaking that Stratocaster that night. But we were about 5 feet away from him. So, I mean, I saw the big guys that we just sort of were heavily, I mean, Hendrix and The Who, I saw teenager. And a lot of other people didn't even know it existed because it wasn't getting a lot of play on popular radio. There were sort of the, at the end of the dial, there was the real cutting edge rock station that was picking up on the Hendrix and Who and things like that. But it was hard to find anything. It was mostly top 40 stuff and 50,000 watt clear channel, top 40 stations blasting all over the country. But, come from a musical family. I had two older sisters, and my aunt was a church organist, and my dad couldn't read music well. Neither can I, but he could hear a melody, he could play it, and I had that same gift that I inherited from him.
Yeah.
Rock and roll, and my mother said, why don't you go take lessons from somebody else, and because I did not take very many guitar lessons. The stuff was being invented, but wasn't being taught, and I don't know how you would teach it, but this guy was like a British guy that came over, late 60s we're talking about, and he looked like... He wore his Beatle boots. He had a Beatle haircut, even though he's playing jazz. And I think that was his way of meeting American young females.
Right.
But he would tell me stories about England and this and that. Anyway, he talked about The Who. And he said, "Oh, James, a crazy bastard. You don't want to do anything like that." And I'm sitting there thinking, "Yes, I do."
Well,
sorry,
course.
Bill Davis, but if you're still alive.
So,
the guy's name.
That's his name. So that's where your love of the Stratocaster comes from.
Well, Hendrix, definitely. Absolutely. Because before that, it seemed like you see Buck Owens and it's a bunch of rockabilly and this and that and the other thing. And then the Strat has got a beautiful sound for that kind of countrified, up-tempo stuff. Yeah, it's great sound, but Hendrix put distortion devices on and all kinds of other stuff, and the whammy bar was those guys would rarely use it, but he was on every song almost, and it was a time. I mean, everything change is the only constant in the world.
Yeah,
is the way I like to put it, because whatever you think is rock solid, never going to change today. Wait a couple of years, and you will be shocked.
Yeah.
Particularly if you invested in stuff that you think is going to go to the moon, and maybe if it went to the moon, it's already going to the moon already, and it's headed back down to Earth.
Yeah.
And you're going to crash your bank account and everything else that you put into it. So, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say that like with all that you guys have been through as a band, success wise and record wise and everything. It must feel, you must feel some sort of vindication to release a record in 2021, this record Crash of the Crown, which by the way is great, and have it debut at number one on Billboard rock albums?
Well, it's, you know, all those things kind of have some significance, but I really stopped paying attention to them a long time ago. It's like we create, we do our best to do great things that please us, and that we know what our audience is. Not that we're going to bend to them. We're hoping, you know, they're going to, you know, open their brains a little bit more. We'll come at them with us from a slightly different angle. And as long as those recognizable harmony vocals are there, and I hear Tommy Shoy's voice or my voice, or in this case now Lawrence's voice.
Right, right.
They're getting used to him. It's you have to, you know, you have to sort of remain true to your roots on one level, but you have to sort of keep nudging that envelope out a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think Crash of the Crown is that. It's a lot more prog than anything we've done in a long time.
Definitely, yeah.
And I'm not, you know, we have loved the band, yes. Had a chance to, I saw them early on in their original incarnation. We loved the first record they did, and ultimately they wound up opening for us.
Yeah.
Maybe about 5 years ago. And Chris Squire, the bass player, who I was thought was one of the greatest bass players on the planet.
Definitely.
That guy's his bone structure is about twice as thick as mine. He gave me a high five me and he tore my wrist off. But I don't know. Yeah, so it's all good. All good.
Well, it's interesting to get to this record, and it does open up with like this sprawling piece of music that's not easy, so it puts it in that prog territory. But then as soon as it stops, that song, The Fight of Our Lives, it stops and you guys have that a cappella moment and you're like, oh, there's Styx.
That's Styx.
Like, man, exactly, you know, Styx, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing to have that sort of identifiable thing. And the other thing too, I was thinking about, like, with the timeline that you guys were on, and when people go through the ups and downs and the crests and troughs of this industry, you guys really stayed true to what your sound was. It's not like you guys ever went and wrote songs with like Diane Warren or anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, Diane Warren is great at writing hit singles, and a lot of people, you know, been launched to success. I mean, because someone can have a great voice, but if they don't have great material, original material to go with, then they're, you know, they're not going to distinguish themselves and have a career. And don't get me wrong, Diane Warren is a phenomenal songwriter,
phenomenal.
But we've never had to resort to that.
Right.
And we stick to what we do, and we may never have a top 10 hit single, but we're making great music and has a big audience. And I don't know, we'll talk for another, but I really have kind of achieved everything I set out to do as a young man when I picked up guitar at age 14. And I look back on it and I go, it's kind of hard to believe that we did all that.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of, there's a whole lot of needing to be at the right place at the right time with the right stuff.
Yeah.
We were there. If we had been, I mean, like the band Kansas, we're dear friends with those guys. We did a lot of shows with them on the road, and they were from, you know, Topeka, Kansas, which is not, there's no major recording studios there. There's no record industry. Or Chicago had been the center of the jazz movement back, you know, in the 30s, almost 100 years ago. But there was a tradition of Chicago music, Chicago blues, Chicago jazz, and Chicago rock was going back to those days. It was like the Crying Shames and the American Breed, Bend Me, Shave Me, Any Way You Want Me. Those were hit singles for the 50s or for the 60s. But we wanted to go on from there and sort of, we're much more of a British influence, and that's because of the Beatles.
Yeah.
And because of bands like Yes putting out records, and for me, The Who, obviously, and Hendrix. So, I don't know, we just kind of took our own influences, we do what we do, and it's sounding very prog at this point.
Yeah.
But we have the musicians capable of of doing it justice in a live setting, and then maybe even taking it to another level in a live setting, depending on how the energy of the crowd is and everything. And so I don't know. I'm as I look back on our almost 50 years of recording career, we signed the recording contract. First one, forgive me if I've said this already, but February 22nd, 1972. And coming up this next February, be 50 years on
2/22/22. Wow. Wow, man.
You are entering the Twilight Zone.
Congratulations. Man, can you get it?
We're not there yet.
No, not yet, but you will be. Tell me a little bit about when did you guys make Crash of the Crown? Was that on? Did you do that during the pandemic? Did you record it remotely? How were you guys able to do this? Make this record?
Well, Tommy and Will Vankovich, who produced the record and who co-wrote stuff with Tommy. Tommy had actually met Will when he was in when Tommy was in Damn Yankees. It was like, you know, acquaintance of Jack Blades and a writer.
Right.
And a guy that had been in, you know, bands, lesser bands here and there. And but Tommy just really enjoyed writing with Will, and he actually sort of helped him financially to be able to move to Nashville and get involved in the Nashville scene there, being the good writer that he is. And then those guys started writing, and then Lawrence had been writing separately. And I was taking a vacation. But all of a sudden, I get a call from the clear blue. JY, we need you to come down here and play some guitar and sing on this record. I said, okay. I went down there two or three different times and play guitar. You know, do your JY thing here, do your JY thing there. And what have you. And so it was really Tommy Shaw has too much time on my hands. He's a guy that he doesn't like to sit still.
Yeah.
And so he's always going. He's got a motor that runs high.
Yeah.
Mine doesn't run nearly that high. On stage, yes, but off stage, no, thank you. But Tommy Shaw is a rock star. He's an amazing creative force. He's a great human being, and he's the genesis of making this happen, and Will is at his side, and Lawrence came in, and Lawrence is also a force of nature, a superstar in Canada, never quite got the context of 60, is making his mark, certainly right, in the American scene, and those three guys kind of, you know, did the writing, and they decided JY's playing here, JY's playing there, and we need JY here, we need JY there, we need his voice here, we need his voice on the harmonies, because I've been part of the Styx harmonies from day one. So.
Yeah. And those are just the sound of the Styx harmony is made up of just three voices, right? Maybe doubled or tripled or something.
Well, typically on records, you like to double the voices. It just kind of adds to the force of the whole thing.
Right. But seeing you guys,
you can do that.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Oh, what I was going to say is like seeing live stuff of you guys, it's just amazing because it's just three. Is it three or four of you singing on stage right now, like live, like last night?
I think Will is singing parts of the harmonies, and I'm singing parts. I mean, Tommy and Lawrence clearly are there.
It's just so definable.
I'm sorry, I talked over your question.
Oh no, I'm sorry. It's just so definable that like when you hear it, it really like. Really focusing in on it, it was getting it to the point where I was getting like goosebumps from it, where I was like, wow, they sound like them, no matter what they do, and your voices have all held up, you know, throughout time.
Well, my voice, I think, is a unique, because I don't really have a sweet voice, I just have a really strong voice, and then Tommy's got a certain sweetness and to his voice, and Lawrence has got like this high...
Right.
Really hot. So, you know, I mean, a lot of the bands, like even Three Dog Night, going back to the sort of the and the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you wind up in a range where you'd have a female singing, but you got a man singing up there.
Right.
And Lawrence has got that kind of high voice that most men don't have, and so he gets really is great on those. And I've just got a forceful upper mid-range in my voice, but I can also do the real low stuff. And so it is what it is. And, you know, I mean, like any sports team, you look at the talent of your personnel and you try and, you know, mix that into a potion that's going to really work. And it takes a lot of experimentation. Sometimes you lay down the tracks and go, that sucks. Yeah. That can be a lot better or whatever. And I could sing that better, or you should sing that part and I should sing the other part, kind of a thing. But that's the beauty in the studio. You can use with multi-track recording, what it was back in the, you know,
yeah,
in the 50s and 60s. We're able to, you know, sort of play games with it and move things around and try different things. So it's not, I mean, that sound is the sound of my voice. My voice has always been there.
Yeah.
And Tommy's voice has almost always been there.
Yeah.
And Lawrence is perfect because what John Strelewski brought with the really high voice, he sang the high part on Lady. I was the middle part and Dennis was on the melody a little bit lower, but we're all men singing strong.
Yeah.
And high. So, with crashing cymbals and guitars.
Yeah.
Anyway, let me get a sip of water here. I'm getting a little dry.
Sure.
Okay.
So there was something that was happening last night. I was listening to Miss America. And then I saw a live version on YouTube. And
okay.
I'm going to ask, have you ever thought that song might have been the prototype for Iron Maiden? Because like the riff of that song predates Iron Maiden, and Iron Maiden sounds like that riff sped up.
I haven't spent a lot of time listening to Iron Maiden.
I don't know if I have either, but that's like when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, wow, this really has like this sort of the gallop and the, you know, like all sort of the characteristics of what Iron Maiden defined their sort of guitar thing on. And I was like, wow, I think this is like kind of the first song that ever really sounded like this.
You know, I can't speak for Iron Maiden. No. What I do know is the first time we played England, which was in late 1977, that Joe Elliott and Phil and a bunch of the guys from Leopard were in the audience to see us when we played Sheffield, England for the first time. I mean, I was maybe it was 78. And they were all in the audience. So when we finally worked with those guys, and of course they've overshadowed us in terms of how many records they've sold and whatever. They feel a little more true to where they were, whereas we've changed lineups a bit.
Yeah.
But I know, I think Leopard was definitely influenced by us.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know them well enough to really, you know, make a judgment about it.
So I might have been the first guy that ever said that to you?
Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, I mean, I love heavy metal. And that's always my favorite song. I mean, it doesn't, unless it gets us really, you know, but just the power of metallic sounding guitars with thundering bass and thundering drums and the big voices, that's something that gets my attention.
Yeah.
So I kind of lifted, you know, that and put it in the context of what we were doing back in the late 60s, signed the recording contract in 72, so in the 70s.
Right.
And maybe it wasn't a complete thought, but I think you know what I was driving
at. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I want to ask you this. For a guy that's been on tour for almost 50 years, what was that like when everything stopped for you, like in 2020? How did you deal with it?
Well, you know, it was... You know, I guess I'm enough of a historian to know that nothing goes on forever, and there's always something that comes out of left field or from behind you that you don't foresee. But there's been an ebb and flow to a lot of different careers with music people, certainly with film actors, where they're hot for 10 years and then they disappear, and then all of a sudden they're brought back in a different context, and it's
right.
It's that, and for me, honestly, I've been married to the same woman since 1972, and
that's amazing.
She's had some illness problems here and there, and she had a stroke actually now about 12, 15 years ago, and so, you know, it was always difficult for me to leave her side to go do this, but she encouraged me to go, and she recovered pretty well from it.
That's good.
Probably never have any use of her right arm. She was a righty, but she's adapted to being lefty, and she was as highly motivated as I am. She was she hated going downtown to work, and I just said, you don't have to go to work. Just stay here and be beautiful for me, and take care of me. And she. I have no sense of what to wear in wardrobe, but she'll, like, I've kind of learned from her, but she's responsible for all the way I look, the way I dress, because she has a great sense of that.
Yeah.
She has a great sense of a lot of things that I'm lacking as a man. My grandfather started as a business when he came to the United States from Sweden back in, way back when, and my dad and two brothers took it over, and I was in line to take that up on. So I worked in the family business for a little while, but I really wanted to do this, and I was successful with this. That was kind of, family business was kind of the fallback position. But my better half, my skills are related to playing music and knowing how business and finance operate, which most musicians don't know.
Right.
A lot of my college graduates took their engineering degree and became lawyers.
Right.
So I've got a host of lawyers I can rely on for all kinds of different stuff. So it's my wife rounds me out and balances me in an amazing way. And to me, she's the most beautiful creature to ever walk the planet. And even though she's not 100%, I want to be by her side as much as I can. And touring makes it impossible to go back and forth and still have energy. Make a private jet back and forth, but I would be
broke.
You know, not
yeah.
And probably not making any money. And my wife hates me taking private jets, so I've stopped doing it. But in any event, she's my balance, and she was a Hendrix fan. She loves so much of the music that I love, and I'm a happy guy and. Love doing what I do, and my better half is there. And I don't know how to get on that tangent, but
I don't know. But that's really, really touching, JY, to know that probably throughout this whole craziness since 1972, you've had some kind of grounding where you've always been able to know who you are.
Well, I mean, I had a sister that became quadriplegic when she was in her mid 20s, and she had just gotten married, and her husband hung around for a while, but then he. Eventually flew the coop.
Right.
And my mother took her back home, and my mother lived to be 98 years old, and my mother took care of my quadriplegic sister for 25 years. I mean, we brought hired help in or whatever, because my mom, particularly as she got older, couldn't do it all.
Right.
But that's the example that was set for me and my family. So when my better half, when she had a stroke now about 12 years, 13 years ago, and lost the use of her right arm, and she was a righty. But we've adapted, and so I just like to be there, let her see that I'm strong and alive and there. And I want her, who is she's really been my rock throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
She's I walk out the front door. She goes, "You're not wearing that, are you?" I said, "Okay."
Well,
she has a tremendous sense of style, and I'm lacking there. But she's the one that dresses me funny. So,
well, that's good. you guys are out for a while. Speaking of like not wanting to be gone for too long from her side, you guys are, and I noticed that a lot of these dates are rescheduled. Even some of them even twice. I think the show that you're doing here at Nutty Brown has been rescheduled twice because of the pandemic and all the things that are going on. You guys are out on the road for a while, but you're feeling good. You sound great on those videos I saw.
Well, the we've got a couple of weeks. We've been sort of going strong here for the last 6-8 weeks, and now we've got about a 2-week break coming up. We have one show in the middle of it, but it's in the Chicago area, so it'll be easy for me, and I'll just go back home that same night probably. Or maybe I won't go home the same, but I'll be gone one night. We've got about a full 2 weeks at home, and then I'm gonna. That'll be the voices will be rested.
Yeah.
What have you, and get a chance to sort of rebalance the machine and go back at it again.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on this new record. You guys really, like, it's inspiring to get to see artists that are a decade or so ahead of you, doing, still creating. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times in artists as they get older, they lose that edge to create, and to hear an album that's so great with so much passion and still so much excitement to make music, it's pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, the credit goes to Tommy and Lawrence in a big way, and it goes to Todd. I mean, and Ricky Phillips is no damn slouch. That guy's a rock star.
Yeah.
And I've started calling him Cool Hand Luke. He looks like a rock star. He's a great bass player. To Chuck's credit, you know, obviously had a lot of illness issues, but he comes out and sits in, and sometimes we'll have two bass players on stage, which is, I don't know, you can get away with it. I've seen other bands that do that.
Yeah.
It's pretty rare, but, we have a great sense of family here, and, I mean, Tommy and I have had our ups and downs, but the whole thing is working.
Yeah.
And so, don't mess with it.
No, don't.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it speaks volumes that you guys have really not had many members change. I mean, you've had some significant changes, and at one point you guys called it quits but got back together. But the fact of the matter is that since you reunited in the 2000s or whatever, since Lawrence got in the band, it's essentially been the same band.
Essentially it has been, and, you know, I've one thing I preach to everyone I talk to about, well, how come this? I said, flexibility and adaptability. Change is the only constant in the world, in the universe, and something's going to change your mind about this 4 months from now. But let's try and adapt here. Let's not freak out. We can manage everything if we just take a deep breath and back up a little bit and take a long look at it and say, well, what if we did this, you know, just move a few chess pieces around the board and go back at it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, I won't keep you. I know we're nearing the end of our thing, but for those of you, I'm based in Austin here, so people can see you guys Saturday, October 23rd at the Nutty Brown Amphitheater, or if you live in the San Antonio area, Sunday, October 24th at Floor's Country Store. Both great places. I've played them both. I love them.
Sounds great.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much, and I wish you a lot of luck and success.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you.
Thanks. Nice talking to you, buddy.
Okay. Bye now.
James J.Y. Young from Styx. How cool was that? That was awesome. Check out their record, Crash of the Crown, out now. Fantastic fucking record. Fantastic record. Their most prog record yet. Super Styx sounding. They hit it. They hit the nail on the head. If you live in Austin, see them on Saturday, October 23rd at Nutty Brown Amphitheater. And if you live in San Antonio, Sunday, October 24th at Floor's Country Store. If you live somewhere else, go to styxworld.com. Their tour dates are on there. Their stuff is all on there. And I really had a great time talking to JY. That was really exciting. Very exciting. those of you that are new to the show, I put out like 2 or 3 shows a week. You can go through our archives by going to howdidigethere.podbean.com. And you can scroll down the right-hand column through months and years from the last decade. All of the interviews I've done, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all kinds of places. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Means a lot. Hope you guys have a great week, whatever it is you're doing. I want to thank James J.Y. Young for coming on the show again. Styx, baby. Get their album, Crash of the Crown. Go see if they're coming to a town near you at styxworld.com. Craig Schilling, if you listen to this to the end of it, I love you, man. You're one of my best friends in the whole world. And I talked to James J.Y. Young on the phone. Call me. I'll tell you all about it. All right. Love you guys. Thank you for listening to the show. Have a great week. Let's get down.